Well, welcome to Course in Miracles, everybody. Tonight, we're starting a new section, and it's going to leverage off of the previous one. So I'll remind you, the previous one was the last unanswered question. Very specific. That entire section really focused on a particular sentence. It's brilliant teaching, I think. It's a brilliant angle that Jesus drops into your curriculum, that there is a particular question that is an insight into your block to the awareness of truth. It's a great stimulus for a meditation. And it's almost an insulting, challenge to you, isn't it? Here it is. I'll read it for you.
It's like, if I didn't believe that, then what would I believe?
Yeah, I mean, it is, isn't it? Isn't it almost insulting?
Yeah, it's a setup.
Yeah, it's a setup. Have your teacher say, do you want to know what you have denied because it's the truth? What kind of question is that? I mean, does that mean that you don't admit that you denied it? Or does that mean that you actually aren't that interested in the truth? That you're so addicted to something else, something even, maybe something that's more convenient to you than the truth. Isn't it interesting how much comes out of that very cleverly worded sentence that has been the focus for our last several weeks? Do I want to see what I denied and then bolded because it is the truth? Emphasis, to me, it's emphasis on truth. That for me, my priority is the truth. I've given up my ideas of what should happen if I were in the presence of truth. If I had right thinking, I've given up my idea of what that means. I'm open because it's the truth that I'm after. I really believe and trust that the truth will set me free, that the truth will navigate me back toward the source of everything that is behind everything that I can see and cannot see. I just love the certainty I get whenever I have a truth meditation, Not necessarily any particular truth. That would be back to the ego's world of trying to analyze. But the philosophy that above all else, it's the truth. And I trust it, and I want it. Just show me how to make decisions on toward the truth and away from falsehood, and that's what I shall do. So that's what we're doing. It's tough because of what you are. It would be easy if you were some kind of a slave or a servant, or if you could be ordered to do something and forced to follow it. But because of what you are in reality, you cannot be ordered to do anything. It's kind of good news and bad news that you're so powerful. You're so powerful. But you must also recognize that you're so powerful and you're so loved to an extent that you really can't appreciate. So you would not be limited in any way because of what you are. So when Jesus asks you the question from last section, do I want to see what I denied because it is the truth? He knows the answer. Even if you're not quite certain what's being asked of you, he knows the answer. Jesus is a direct part of your mind. Jesus is a manifestation of the Holy Spirit. Follow me now. The Holy Spirit exists in mind. The Holy Spirit exists in mind, and you exist in mind. You see, there is a connection that is easily made. You really, 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 really know something that's not true. And so we have to build some bridges into your fantasy land to make it easy for you to come home, for you to come back to love, back to wholeness, back to truth. That's what we're doing. We even have a character who would be older brother to you, related to you intimately, and would just, you know, help you and care for you. Call that Jesus. It's just a word. It's just a term. It's a bridge term. If you think about this word Jesus and everything it stands for, it's a love letter to you. It's beautiful. The idea of Jesus, whether you believe in this character from 2,000 years ago or not, the idea is really beautiful. It's a love letter to you, reaching to you, to your level. Carrying, in whatever words are possible, the truth. And it's carried the truth into this book you can buy online now. Fantastic. You are so loved. You are so comforted that no matter what happens to you, even if you lose your eyes, I will read this book to you. I recorded it. You just have to hit play. No matter what, the truth is available. So now, isn't it really a question of, really? I mean, you guys, think about your spiritual journey. Isn't it really a question, not so much anymore, is the truth available? But are you available to take whatever steps are necessary to surrender your false self to the truth? Really? This is more true for me every day. Happened again today. I was listening to, every morning I listen to either Course in Miracles or lately it's been Rupert Spira. The guy's amazing. He is the most non-dual teacher ever. Speaks English from England. He's a great teacher, super focused, non-dual. Not Course in Miracles specifically, and you have to switch some of the words he uses to translate it to Course in Miracles. But nonetheless, he's very focused. And it was so wonderful to hear him speak and think, wow, there really is. The truth is here. And he references, you know, old spiritual teachings as well here and there. And it just reminds me, the truth is here. It's already here. I look at the book, it's here. I hear in these meetings, people are referencing times that they have crossed paths with the truth. It's here. But are you ready? Are you fully willing to not have an attachment to what the truth would make you look like, sound like, what you would do? Well, you would be. Jesus actually knows the answer is yes. You, whether you know that or not, because you really have no other choice. Why? Because the things that you would claim cleanly to want, were I to ask them, like, do you want joy? Yes, I want joy. Would you like perfect happiness? Oh, yes. Don't ask twice. It's just yes. Would you like to be the recipient of love and ever more capable with each time you receive love, to give it away, ever more capable to give away the love that you, would you be interested? Yes, I'll take two of those. So that's clear. All right, so we're going to dig in tonight, and this section we're beginning is called The Inner Shift. Inner Shift. Of course, we're talking about your mind. Of course, we're talking about linking with your Holy Spirit. We're also talking about this dedication, though. This, another term is devotion. I ran across that when I was sitting in the Zen environment. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful concept. This idea of devotion. This idea of selfless devotion, of surrender. In the hands of the ego, it's scarcity and possibly going to ruin your life. But when we get down to how you actually live, which is with your thoughts, you live as a verb. You live by choices. And what is driving those choices will affect what you experience. Here's the good news. There's only two. There's only one or the other. There's not a whole menu. This is the really, really good news. It's really, really good news. Welcome, Cecilia. Okay, I got your message. I know everybody here is on board, and you would gladly receive a little help from the part of your mind that wrote this book. Let's go get it. Let's dive in and go get it. Let's take a step. Let's take the hand that's offered us in the form of this Course in Miracles. Take a step. Every step that you take in the direction of your enlightenment, it is permanent. Did you ever think about that? Whatever effort you put in, you can't undo. When exposed to the light, even a little bit, it may only be a little bit, but you can't undo that. Like trying to, undo the internet. You could block it, you could turn it off so nobody could ever see it, but boy, nobody would forget it. Can't undo the connection that we have achieved with the internet. You can't undo the connection you've achieved with one holy instant ever, where you use your mind to opt for a higher thought of truth, an inclusive thought rather than an exclusive thought, an including union thought versus a divided thought. This is the whole menu, folks. All right, well, let's enough of me. Let's have Jesus weigh in, because this is just a wonderful section. Aren't they all? But let's begin with the inner shift, which is on page 465 in your text. 465, the inner shift. He starts out with some provocative words, for sure. I think we're ready to do this, right? Just in case we get to it, I want you to look at one sentence from our previous page that we didn't get to spend time on when we were there. It's in paragraph 10. You see, it says, why is the final question so important? Question mark. And the next sentence is, reason will tell you why. And then it's the same as the other three. This final question is the same as the other three, comma, here comes the teaching. Except in time. Whoa. Yes, Indari. Oh, wait, let me get you muted. You got it? Good.
Yeah. You just sort of got me with the little last statement about you never lose anything on the road to enlightenment. And
yep.
Okay. So the thing I got stuck there was understanding and like having been in a profound state of truth for 5 months at one point, constant.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And then it goes away.
Yes.
And it doesn't come back in the same way,
yes.
All. What might you say about things like that? The profundity, I mean, that was so expansive and so complete and so lengthy.
Yes.
Of.
Yes. Everybody should be forewarned. Thank you, Sundari. Everybody should be forewarned of what she's talking about. And one way to describe it is I got it and then I lost it. It was really real. We really, really felt free for a while. And just things were compounding. And then suddenly, glitch! It's kind of slipped out of your reach. Like it was a little.
It was more than free, Andrew. It was like every taste exploded. Every flower absorbed me. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was very hard to function. You know, and I would be giving chemistry lectures and I'd go out and I'd fall into flowers. And it was really every sense was heightened. Any idea of lack throughout that 5 months was lack.
Yeah.
When each second is explosive and, that probably felt like truth to me.
Yeah, sure.
It's so interesting to go through something like that and not that it doesn't and hasn't totally impacted me, but I haven't been, perhaps my little granddaughter now, you know, I kind of fall into this little portal of her, and it has reminded me of that state, but not there in its explosive ecstasy.
Yes. So what happens is when you, as you walk the spiritual path, there is a vessel. And then there is the, I could say light. There's a lantern, and the lantern carries the light. And you start out in your early spiritual journey, and you're always a lantern, you know, the capable of the light, but it has not been turned on. In fact, you know, you did something else with the light. It's a doorstop, or it's a, you know, it wasn't used as a light, but it is a light. You are a lantern. Nonetheless, and then you go along, and Sundari has been through a variety of spiritual people and exposures and journeys. Just wonderful. She has a amazing background in this journey, and so she's been on some pretty high potency exposures as this woman had, and it is common that. It's like you have a match or a heat source, a burning log next to another piece of wood, and then the wood catches on fire. Now they're both burning. Because why? Because the one that was not burning, in my case, this lantern that is not lit, that you were before your spiritual journey, comes in proximity to something that's burning extremely hot. Now they're both going to light. And then you separate them, and then the this is what happened, I believe, with Sundari, and it's a common story in the enlightenment journey, is that you get away from your source of clarity. You get away from your practice. You get even a little bit. And in Sundari's case, it's easy because although she practices, I think, more perhaps than anybody I've met, I mean, she got her own meditation room and everything. She's really quite focused. She's also capable of getting very high and then somehow getting away from the direct contact. It's very natural. All of us, you could do Course in Miracles where you get involved with the lessons and you happen to be reading some of the text and you're going to a few meetings and you've applied it in your personal life to success and you found huge relief. OMG, this stuff works. And life gets easy. Even though things are still going wrong, they're not going wrong to you anymore because you're aware. You're not beaten down by the things that seem to go wrong in life. You seem to float, good word, float above them. Never underestimate the ego. You are surrounded by the gravity of the ego. Yes, you can still swim to the top, and all of us have sunk down and swam back to the top where the air is easier to breathe, you bet. But that, Sundari, is what's happening. It's very natural. And the experience you described of every flower is absolutely glowing. Nobody can take that away from you. Isn't that great news? There's like, no way. There's no words, no description. Nothing can take that away from you. You, on the other hand, do not stop. That experience has, you know, its gift and forever. You have not stopped. You will never stop, Sundari. You, the extension of God, have been upgraded, and that experience is now beneath you. It was ahead of you for 5 months, so it was, you had to grow into it. And this happens with the Course in Miracles and every other spiritual program. And especially, like I say, when you're next to a very burning light or burning log or somebody who's more advanced than you, you kind of lean on them and they can carry you forth and they can interpret your things for you. And they can really make things go quite easy. You must grow into that, but then you will grow beyond it. Yes, Barbara.
There's a Theravadan teacher who's pretty well known, Jack Kornfield. Anybody know him? You know, he wrote a book called After the Enlightenment, The Laundry. And, you know, it's like you can't sustain, and not that I know, but according to him, you can't sustain that state that you were describing. But you go on, you know, you were saying it was hard to really do normal activity, but you have to do normal activity and you can't sustain that state. So you go forward, but it's not like you leave. You have had that experience. And it's also clear in what you share here. You know what I mean? You may not be in this excited state of, wow, the flowers and all of that, but you take something substantial with you from that experience and you're sharing it. And that's good enough. You know, I mean, that's a
really, yeah. And you can't say that it's gone. That's the thing I want you to.
Yeah, it's clearly not gone.
You could say yesterday I was not in it. Let's say you had a bad day yesterday. You say, oh God, it's embarrassing what I said yesterday or did yesterday or how sad or angry or how much I attacked yesterday. But then with just one little forgiveness thought for your ego that acted yesterday, you can return to the strength that you knew for 5 months. So certainly, be forewarned, everybody. Your highs will be met with what appear like to be vacations, possibly lows, never as low as you were before. That this is a good thing. You can't possibly go as low as when you before you had any light at all. Once the log has burned, it's easier to burn again. Once the lantern knows light, then either you or somebody else will use it for light. Do you see? By its use, you will know its purpose and its truth. And this is the same Course in Miracles says, when you use these workbook lessons, don't necessarily understand them completely, each sentence, but do them anyway. And see if you don't find your light coming on by practicing these very, very, very cleverly worded lessons. And this would be you recognizing that your fire is lit or your light is now actually on and you're not even sure when it got turned on, but you know it's on by the peace you feel and the way you can navigate problems in peace. So everybody go to page 465. Let's have Jesus weigh in on this and get started on some of this wonderful, wonderful discussion we're going to have. Albert, would you unmute yourself and read us paragraph 1 on page 465?
The inner shift. Are thoughts then dangerous to bodies? Yes. The thoughts that seem to kill are those that teach the thinker that he can be killed. And so he dies because of what he learned. He goes from life to death. The final proof he valued the inconstant more than constancy. Surely he thought he wanted happiness, yet he did not desire it because it was the truth, and therefore must be constant.
We will dig into that. I promise you. It's a wonderful teaching. But even that's not the biggest meat of this section, though. Jacqueline, would you read for us paragraph 2? We're going to read the whole section first.
You unmuted? Okay.
I got you.
The constancy of joy is a condition quite alien to your understanding. Yet if you could even imagine what it must be, you would desire it, although you understand it not. The constancy of happiness has no exceptions, no change of any kind. It is unshakable, as is the love of God for his creation. Sure in its vision as its creator is and what he knows, happiness looks on everything and sees it is the same. It sees not the ephemeral, for it desires everything be like itself and sees it so. Nothing has power to confound its constancy because its own desire cannot be shaken. It comes as surely unto those who see the final question is it comes as surely unto those who see the final question is necessary to the rest as peace must come to those who choose to heal and not to judge.
Beautiful. Thank you. Then Don, you're good to go. Why don't you give us paragraph 3.
Excuse me. Reason will tell you that you cannot ask for happiness in constantly. For if what you desire you receive and happiness is constant, then you need ask for it but once to have it always. And if you do not have it always, being what it is, you did not ask for it. For no one fails to ask for his desire of something he believes holds out some promise of the power of giving it. I'm sorry, let me read that.
Yeah, it's a very difficult sentence to read. And as Don rereads it, I'd like you to think about perhaps Jesus is giving you a little primer on creation, on creating, on creative thought, the power of creation. Please, Don, go ahead.
For no one fails to ask for his desire of something he believes holds out some promise of the power of giving it. He may be wrong in what he asks, where, and of what. Yet he will ask because desire is a request, an asking for, and made by one whom God himself will never fail to answer. God has already given all that he really wants. Yet what he is uncertain of, God cannot give. For he does not desire it while he remains uncertain. And God's giving must be incomplete unless it is received.
I think that's one of the paragraphs where Helen and Bill argued day and night about capitalization. And Helen said, we're leaving it as it is. Next paragraph, Ken, or show yourself to the door. Okay, Ross, hit us. I'll get your mute, Ross. Hit us with number four.
You who complete God's will and are his happiness.
Wow, whoa, 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 whoa. Please say that again. Embedded in these few words, is it your identity, your job description, your function, purpose, and power? Whoa. Please, Ross, again.
You who complete God's will and are his happiness, whose will is powerful as his, a power that is not lost in your illusions. Think carefully why you have not yet decided how you would answer the final question. Your answer to the others has made it possible to help you be already partly sane. Yet it is the final one that really asks if you're willing to be wholly sane. I just want to take one sleeve off the straitjacket. Just one. I'll leave the other one wrapped around me.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. Okay, Barbara, bring us home. I got your mute.
Okay. What is the holy instant but God's appeal to you to recognize what he has given you? Here is the great appeal to reason, the awareness of what is always there to see, the happiness that could be always yours. Here is the constant peace you could experience forever. Here is what denial has denied revealed to you. Wait. Here is what denial has denied revealed to you. For here the final question is already answered, and what you ask for given. Here is the future now, for time is powerless because of your desire for what will never change. For you have asked that nothing stand between the holiness of your relationship and your awareness of its holiness.
Wow. Oh, that is sweet. Sweet prescription and description. Okay, let's dig in. 465, paragraph 1. Let's dig in. Let me turn this thing off. Okay. The inner shift. All right, then. Move your gaze up to the previous paragraph at the top of the page. Notice how it says, sentence 7, no thought, but has the power to release or kill. And none can leave the thinker's mind or leave him unaffected. Well, that means if you have a thought of murder or a thought of killing, you keep it. You can't project it out there. This makes you now very responsible for your own experience. Sundari, what do you got?
Well, the roundup of that experience and how I killed it myself. It came about from union with another person, not sexually, just someone I hardly knew, but a union occurred and I got their state. But at the same time, for that whole 5 months, I was hearing whatever they were thinking and seeing where they were in another country and like living this like two people in my one body. I mean, it was just the strangest thing ever. And then I encountered the person again, and they said, take back your energy. And that's how I left the state. And in the first description, I was kind of denying my part and how my thought about feeling guilty about being in this joined state. I haven't ever seen it written up anywhere it was like this wild experience that just went on and on and on.
Wow. But, you know, two strings, another analogy is sympathetic vibration. Two strings on an instrument. You don't even touch the, you touch one and don't touch the other. They're both vibrating. I mean, these are all laws of mind that are being exhibited now in form and extension. Everything is in mind. And so you've got yourself close to a vibrating string there. Yeah. Yeah. Another time that happens, just to go through a few of these things that are in my head, is if you take drugs and you find yourself feeling really free. Wow, your mind is so opened, you say. And it is. For that short time, you have borrowed the vibration, the capabilities, the sight, or even the illusion, depends on what's really going on there. But you've borrowed some open-mindedness, maybe. You don't own it. You don't get to keep it. But nonetheless, it had an effect on you. Get close to that vibrating string and it has an effect on you. You cannot forget it. Even though you didn't perhaps own it entirely. Yes, Barbara.
Did I say this already here to this group, but I did have that experience on drugs.
No.
I was 19. I lived up on Redwood Road in Aptos, the last house on the road. Me and my boyfriend were going into Santa Cruz for the night, into the Catalyst, got hitchhiking. I got into a car with my boyfriend, and there were two guys in the front. And the guy handed back a baggie full of psilocybin mushrooms and said, here. And I ate them.
Whoa.
Without knowing, I mean, this was stupid Barbara Crumb, fresh from Rolling Prairie, Indiana, right? I just ate them. And had the most amazing experience, was so stoned that we had to get a motel in Beach Flats because I couldn't get home. I was, and all I remember is laying on the bed and holding up my hand, and I was not there. I was not there. And I remember the feeling of lifting my head off the bed and looking down at the bed, and I was not there. And then I went into this experience of hours of being the ocean. I mean, just being awareness of water, vast water. And that's what I felt like for hours. And when I finally started to come down, I went into the bathroom and my hair was totally electrified. And you know, that was just me getting stoned at that point in my life.
When Barbara said the vast water, you saw her arms go out when she said it. And did everybody go along with her a little bit there? Everybody feel even as little, even a little bit, you feel a little more vast yourself as we listen closely to her words?
And, you know, I know that I didn't follow up on that. I didn't care about it. There was no, you know, spiritual me at all. But I do know that had a huge impact on the journey that I'm on tonight. And lots of years and lots of stuff came in between. But maybe 15 years later, I was reading Joseph Campbell. This is much, much later. And there was a description of the oceanic experience that very practiced yogis get to. And it was a description of that long ago 19-year-old stoned in the backseat of a car. Sundari, it's another one of those things about it doesn't leave you. You may not have any idea what it is, but it doesn't leave you. And there's a seed in there. And I know that that's impacted me. So that.
Are you guys familiar with the YouTube from 10 years ago called Stroke of Insight with Jill Bolte Taylor? This is a 10-minute YouTube that was effective for me personally. It connected a couple of dots for me when this brain scientist had a stroke on half of her brain, shut down half of her brain. You know, you have the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere, and her practical side was cut off from blood. And she's a brain scientist, and she knew what was happening by the symptoms. As she went to go call for help, she realized that she had phone numbers, but she didn't know how to use them, for example. This happened over a couple of months. It's on YouTube. It's called Stroke of Insight, and it's Jill Bolte, B-O-L-T-E, Taylor. 10 minutes, I recommend it. It was very helpful for me because, you know, in my journey of my experiences that I knew were true, but I did not have such a handy description by this neuroscientist of what then she saw. Or like when Barbara described, I'm not a big drug user, so I'm borrowing from Barbara's experience, just like the rest of you, as she
was a big drug user.
And she got expansive and she felt it, you know, and so this scientist, she got to the point where when they did get her into the hospital, this one part she describes that her practical side, her linear side of her brain had shut down. Her eyes were still open. She could still think and see, and she would put her hand, she described at one point in the video, she put her hand on the brick wall and she could not see the difference between the brick wall and her hand. She knew they were one. It wasn't even wondering that they were separate or how could this be. None of that was there. She just experienced this for, I don't know, it was hours or days until her brain reconnected. But she had the dots connected for her on the uniformity of things. Unity is a very, very hard concept for we who live very separated lives. And that particular instance, you don't have to take drugs. You don't have to go meet Sundari's guru and get infected by his energy and have to have it taken back 5 months later. No. Course of Miracles will do it. In fact, just like we just read, your own intention, and like I asked you in the beginning of the meeting, to accept your own intention for the truth, and you will find all sorts of doors to step through and sentences in this book that will light your fire and raise your vibration just as would be useful and that you can handle. Yes, Indari.
Yeah, I was listening to her TED talk about having a hemorrhagic stroke while my husband was having a hemorrhagic stroke. And I was trying to describe it to him. And he said, oh, I've got this terrible headache. And he died that night. And it was so profound to me both that it was the same hemisphere for him as she had. So I knew he left in a blissful state. And I wrote her later, and she said it was the most moving thing she'd gotten about her book.
Wow.
And that I was able, because of that, you know, even when things are obvious, like, you know, he had to have a 1% chance if we had operated or something, or near zero, there's this guilty feeling. And it was because I was watching that video and trying to tell him about it that I could drop the guilt, because it was Holy Spirit saying to me, this was inevitable, and I'm showing it to you this way. So I'm
nice
for that.
Thank you, Sundari. That puts even more onto that importance of that video for me now that I know how it affected your life. Thank you. Yeah. So as much as you can, I use the word afford. It's in A Course in Miracles too. It is also a spiritual journey word. Get the money thing out of your head. But think about the basis of what afford means. Afford means that you will allow yourself in comfort to proceed, doesn't it? If you can afford something, you have not only what it takes, but you also are giving yourself permission. You feel like you have what it takes to take the next step. I like this word afford in our spiritual journey for that reason. And so okay, so let's dig in now on 465. And I just had you read the sentence in the previous paragraph. No thought but has the power to release or kill, and none can leave the thinker's mind or leave him unaffected. So watch your thoughts. You will live with what you think. You're not alone either in the effects of your thoughts. But boy, you better believe you are the first recipient of them and their power. This is why I was asking you as an exercise a couple weeks ago to look at your swearing, your cursing, even in your private time. Do you attack yourself with horrible words, graphic, violent words? And I'm not saying you have to stop or you can't be considered holy. No, that's your ego swearing, and you just don't want to follow up on it. You want to not keep the energy that the swearing is trying to evoke in you. Swear, you release. But this is very important, because you will live what you're thinking. And if you're going to bring yourself to abide in peace, you must learn now not to keep war, not to keep anger, not to keep worry, not to keep guilt, not to keep doubt, not to keep smallness. These things will come across your mind because of your habits, because of where you are sojourning right now. But because you are spiritually awakening, you are called to forgive. Remember, forgive means release. To release these small, negative, guilty, darkening, angry, murderous words and thoughts. Just release them. Release them. Yes, Indari.
Well, you know, I think of the power here. So we die because of the thoughts, and also we can live because of the thoughts. And so 2 days ago, the co head of the Foundation for Inner Peace, which disseminates the Course in Miracles, died. Bob Rosenthal.
Bob died?
Bob died 2 days ago.
Well, I didn't hear that.
So I thought it would be sweet if we took a minute at the end of the meeting just to extend our gratitude and our support for his transitioning, for what he's done for each of us personally in holding that energy so that we could study the Course in Miracles.
That's great.
Going to his Course in Miracles group at his house. And he was a wonderful man.
Yeah, what a great energy. What a great energy and a devotee, of Course in Miracles, and teaching it and celebrating it as he went. Yeah, thank you, Sarah.
And what was his role?
He was co-president of the Foundation of Inner Peace. So when Judy Scutch stepped down, her position became his and her daughter, Tam Morgan.
Okay.
So now Tam is holding the energy of the foundation, and we might also share our gratitude for her to be able to step into this and hold the energy for all of us.
Yeah.
Dominating the course, getting it translated and such.
Somebody has to be the keeper of the of A Course in Miracles, and that's what that smaller still team of people does. Yeah. Good. Oh, thank you, Sundari. Yeah, good. Well, go, Bob, go. Yeah, I can see Bob's energy carrying him just fine as needed. Good. Okay, now, are thoughts then dangerous? That's the question Jesus is asking in the beginning of our new section. He says, well, you just told me that they have the power to release. Oh, good. Whew, what a relief. Release. That's free. Or kill. This sounds like a very serious discussion. Are thoughts then dangerous? Well, to bodies, yes. Jesus is throwing down the dividing line here. To bodies, yes. He says, the thoughts that seem... Okay, good. We're back to our spiritual discussion, right? The thoughts that seem to kill. And then he's going to get deadly serious again, the next few words, all in the same sentence. The thoughts that seem to kill are those that teach. The word teach is very important in A Course in Miracles. The whole thing is based on teaching. One way to look at the work of A Course in Miracles, other than the ostensible course, text, workbook, manual for teachers. It came through teachers. Other than that obviousness, has a bunch of lessons in the middle. Other than that, all that obviousness. But is that A Course in Miracles itself emphasizes this word teach. And it describes that to teach is to change. To teach is to change. It is time for you all to change. You have been denying the truth. You have some habits that you need to release, and they cannot be released for you because of what you are. So you are called to seek out this change, to learn of the light in you and choose it. You will stumble on the light. If you didn't have Course in Miracles or any other guide, you will stumble on it. You'll stumble on the dark as well. With the Course in Miracles and with your spiritual program and with guides, you can stumble on the light more often. And you will feel, you will experience a lightness of being for your efforts. These will call you to return to your learning, to your awakening. But you are returning. It's not making you do anything. Nothing can make you do anything. Remember we read on page 448 not too long ago, then you must leave behind the thoughts that there's anything that's beyond the Son of God. that can influence the Son of God thinks or does or says. You are actually gloriously responsible. This is one of the biggest teachings that comes. Okay, so yes, bodies are dangerous. Thoughts are dangerous to bodies, you bet. But then he gets really serious. He says, these thoughts that seem to kill are those that teach. Now, I hope you think when you see the word teach, give it a little more weight. In fact,
just to give you a little more emphasis
on this idea of teach, it is the 14th most used concept in A Course in Miracles across the top 100 that I have noted. Teaching and learning. In fact, I should combine. I have learning as number 14 and teaching as number 42. So if I combine teaching and learning, it would bump up this idea of learning.
Is that list on your site?
I don't think so. It might be. I forget. Yeah, I went to the top 100 A Course in Miracles words that are used in the book. And I'll just give you the top 10 without distracting us too much from our intense discussion because it's so fun. Isn't it fun? I easily stayed up late doing this. Right before one of my intensives, I had this idea at about 7 or 8 o'clock at night, and the intensive was the next morning at 10, you know. And so I just stayed up and did the whole thing. So fun. The number one reference in A Course in Miracles, number one with 3,192 references, is God. Who knew? I would not have said that. Oh, no way. No way. This book doesn't seem like it's a book about God. Sure, it mentions it here and there, but, you know, I would think the word ego is used more than the word God. And you know, and as I remixed this formula a few times, truth be told, the number one by a factor of another 50% at least, that's actually is a single letter word, is the most referenced word in the entire book. And it is the word I. 5,000 instances. But you recognize that those are mostly from the text. Who is the I in the text? You know, that's the author. That's Jesus, the author. He's writing down his notes. He's writing down his teaching. It's very personal now. It's very personal, this book, as a love letter, a message, a teaching, a guide for you from this part we call Jesus. Number two reference in A Course in Miracles. Of all the five, it's 497,000 words. So 500,000 words, half a million words. The second highest used term is see and look. Almost half of number one is number two. I never would have thought God and Father and God, I put those two together, are the highest references in the book by double. I mean, who knew? See and look with 1,800 references. He's calling you to recognize what you're doing and what you need to do. Number three, not a surprise. Number three most used term, A Course in Miracles, with 1,600 references is truth. This is a book about the truth. Number four. One and oneness. Close tie with number three. Number five, also right there. But this was a big surprise for me. I wouldn't have guessed it. Number five, most used term in Course in Miracles, is give or gift. The idea of what is given. Now you start to recognize how much that's all throughout the workbook. Yeah. Number six is mind. All right. Now that makes sense, doesn't it? Of Course in Miracles, mind. Number seven is thought and think. I could combine those, and that would bump it up to number two. But number eight is world. This is your block, is your world. So that's naturally, Course in Miracles would have the world as the eighth most used term in the whole book. Number nine, this is easily accepted, holy or holiness, the ninth most used term in the book. And then the tenth most used term is real and reality. I could combine that easily up with the truth and it will zip into the second spot. Number 11 is brother. This is your book, isn't it? This is your book. It says, this is a book where we have the highest reference for God to see or look at the truth of oneness that is a gift through your mind that you would think and you would have a miracle around the world and find the holiness that, that is really can be seen through your own brother. I just used the top 10 in one sentence. It's Course in Miracles. So, and it goes on like that. And you just recognize that, you know, this course, you can, that's what I thought in my teaching in the intensive I was doing. It was, you know, what is Course in Miracles? You know, it's one of the things I was going to cover. And I thought, well, here are the top words that it uses. And sure enough, these are Course in Miracles. The next one is make and made. The next one is love and then learn and then sun and sonship and time and then perception, then create, then meaning, then belief, then choice, nothingness. 23 is no, and 24 is salvation. It's your book. So, yeah, I'll put that up. I'll put that list up.
I just have to say, I was a first grade teacher, and most of those words are first grade words.
Nice.
And I noticed that right away about the book, because I kept pulling up words that were repetitive, like see.
Mm.
I mean, that's a first grade word. So first graders could read this. I'm sure they couldn't. But anyway, they're all very, very simple
good
words. Yeah. And I love them.
Yeah. And there aren't invented words, despite how complex some of the messages are. They're in English. They're just written in everyday languaging. Some of there's double and triple negatives that can really throw you off. But they're there for a good reason. Now add to that, 60% of the book is written with an iambic pentameter. It's write one sentence in iambic pentameter, and maybe you'll get it by the end of next week if it makes any sense at all. It's really hard to do. And yet it's just decorated throughout the book. Entire pages, one after the other, perfect iambic pentameter. Wow, crazy stuff. Okay, back to work. Oh, we have any time left? Yes. Okay. Now, sentence one, page 465. It is telling you that the thoughts that seem to kill are those that teach, keyword, teach the thinker. So now I hope you think that this word teach really has a lot of weight. It's the same reason why I wanted you to think about your swearing a couple weeks ago, because you're teaching yourself. You're teaching yourself about yourself. You're teaching yourself about what you think and about what you believe is what you speak. It's a nasty circle that can hold you down. And you will live your thoughts. And if your thoughts are graphic and insulting to yourself, this is how you're going to feel. Why should anybody love you if you are a blink, blink idiot? If that's what you believe. It's just foolishness, right? It's the ego trying to box you into littleness like you designed it to do. Okay? So this is all going back to that fourth sentence, right? That last unanswered question. Isn't it wonderful? Yes, Luann. Oh, wait. Let me get your mute. I got it. Okay, go.
I used to tell my clients, the one thing I won't listen to is that you criticizing yourself.
Hey, that's helpful. I wish my parents told me that when I was a kid.
Me too.
Okay. Okay, these thoughts that teach the thinker. What are these thoughts? What are murderous thoughts? What are these swearing? You know, what are these attack thoughts that you have against yourself? Self-attack. You think you've private thoughts? You have no private thoughts. But still, you're the first customer for these horrible things you say to yourself or that you announce about the world even, these swearing that you do about the world. You will live with that. And then you do. You do live with that. What are they doing? They're teaching the thinker that he can be killed. Do you see the ugly circle? So, Course in Miracles students, this must be your lesson that you take away, that you will live your thoughts. And you have. Welcome to your world. You are living your thoughts. When you or somebody you know gets angry, does everybody in your life have somebody who just seems to go off the handle a little extra than maybe than they should when they get angry? Do you know anybody that kind of, whoa, hey, it's not that bad, right? When that happens, don't you take a step back, all right? Don't you kind of make sure you don't say the wrong thing. You're on eggshells now because they are firecracker. They're going off. They are teaching you you're in danger. Who knows what's going on in their head? But this person is exposing the violence that is going on in their private thoughts. You are exposing the violence that's going on in your private thoughts when you swear out loud in front of somebody else. God damn, boy, I can't believe I broke this pen. Isn't that different? You can, if I handled that better, I think you would even get the, but it's, we're communicating. And you know how they say your physical is 60% and your verbal is only 40%? You combine a negative physical and a negative verbal with some swearing, and you are communicating murder, anger, attack. So, folks, I'm doing it again. I am asking you to watch your words. Carefully watch your words and choose when they happen to immediately forgive that energy and bleed it off. Just let it go. Do not keep these impure thoughts. Let them go. And then you will live now with the power of having let them go, which is wonderful. It's freeing. It's very freeing.
You know, that's why I think I hate it when my daughter gives a finger to another driver or something like that, because that just chills me.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah,
good. Sundari.
I have a theory in my book about a three-dimensional axis.
Show everybody your book.
What?
Pick up your book.
It just seems to be here.
How convenient.
The Choice of Happiness, Glimpses from an Extraordinary, Ordinary, Scientific, Mystical Life. And yeah, Gary Renard's the one that got me to publish it, actually. Mm-hmm. Which was surprising to me, because until then I didn't know.
I distracted you. What were you going to say?
So the thing I wanted to say is I have this theory that we on one axis would be intention, and the other the depth of emotion with which you put around that intention, and the third axis is manifestation. And so basically it's your thought or intention activated by the emotional template, creating what happens to you and what projections are coming back and all of the illusion of the world. So it's really important to catch each thought. And I keep asking, is this what I want to bless myself with?
There you go.
Is this what I want to bless myself with?
Is this what I want to bless myself with, or is this what I want to curse myself with?
Exactly. Exactly. And a lot of times when really wonky things happen to me, I'll go back and try to find the generating thought. And it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm honest about it.
Don't have to go far.
Not denying the truth. How easy it is to go back if one's cultivates sort of an every minute Zen around Vipassana, mindfulness around what you're actually thinking moment by moment.
It gets very hard to go back if you are constantly denying your participation. And now it becomes a grievance that you've held with, say, maybe even your loved one for years, and you never addressed it. It's very hard to go back in that case. But if you do what Sundari is talking about, what we're learning with A Course in Miracles, is you get more present. You get present, and when your contraction happens, and I'm calling you out on your swearing now, when that happens, you don't wait. You immediately release that feeling, release that thought. You might even get to the point where you giggle. This will be good. You go from all contracted and angry to going, I'm not going to live that way. Quickly. It's so much easier. And so now you become responsible now for your own lightness of being. Lightness is obvious, right? Being is what and how you are. Wouldn't you like to have a lightness of being? Yes, of course you would. And would you like to achieve that lightness of being for all time by looking at what you've denied? Because it's the truth. The thing you've denied, the very block, the thing that you've said no to, the thing you've been hiding from yourself is the truth. Do you see? We are called to pursue the value of, you'll see, it's in this section too, the value of this idea of happiness, this crazy idea of perfect happiness, for example. That's even possible, you deny. Am I right? Or is everybody here already perfectly happy all the time and it's no problem? No, I don't think so. The Course is calling you out on that. The Course even has lessons in the workbook that say your function is perfect. It's not hidden, but it is really, really hard to believe. Because you are actively denying the truth of perfect happiness. Or joy, love, take your pick. The author knows those things to be eternally true because it's what created you. The author knows. So that is what we're talking about, and it's really, really hard to accept, which is why it's spread out over so many words, and we're doing it in a way that you can't outwardly reject and say it's too good for me or it's too hard to reach or it's for somebody more enlightened or blah, blah, whatever, whatever, whatever. This book is so cleverly written that the truth of this will sneak through your defenses. And one day you will just find that you feel a lot better and you think it's going to last forever. A Course in Miracles has done its work. The miracle has occurred. Miracle's a shift in perception. And then your forgiveness is your letting go of the swearing, for example. You just let it go. And then the holy instant is you realizing that you let it go. And it wasn't so hard after all. Rinse and repeat. Up the ladder you go to heaven, really. To full understanding. You've blocked yourself from heaven. You've blocked yourself from understanding. And we are doing this work to unblock you. And now we're working on something called the inner shift. And we're leveraging off the simple little question. Are you willing to look at what you denied because it is the truth? Isn't that sweet? Follows on tightly. Okay, ready? There's more in this paragraph. We're trying to get it before we run out of time. It's some good metaphysical, you know, how A Course in Miracles works. So you got this idea of learning. You got this idea that whatever thoughts you have, you keep. Whether there's thoughts of release or murder, you're the first customer. Okay, you got it, right? Here we go, ready? Sentence 4 just told us that what you're thinking you affects you. And so he, the thinker, you, dies, in quotes, thank you, Helen, Jesus, dies because of what he And you really could put the word learned in quotes too. Learned. This is the way you become endarkened. I know you'd like to become enlightened, but until you change your habits, you will continue to be endarkened with your thoughts, your habitual thoughts. You're killing off your freedom with restrictive thoughts. Thoughts where you attack yourself, for example. Thoughts where you attack others, even if you keep them private. Obviously, if you say them out loud, you're a bully, and people know you're a bully, and they don't tell you because they don't want you to be more of a bully after they tell you. Because you'll say, I'm not a bully. You're a bully. You do not escape your words. You do not. Okay? Ready? Next sentence. Doesn't give up. Sentence 5. He goes from life to death, comma, the final proof, death being the final proof. He valued the inconstant more than constancy. You see, if life can die, it makes it inconstant. One of the things that, one of the huge awakenings for me in my whole spiritual journey in A Course in Miracles was the idea that of the absolute versus a relative, the spiritual versus a material, of course, right? But one of them was this term constant. How's that even possible? You know, everything I know of being a science and engineering background, it's like, you know what? If you don't keep putting energy in, you don't keep putting motion in, it won't keep going. There is no such thing as constant. You know, it's this entropy thing is real. I thought, but that's because I was limited thinking. When my mind opened now to the spiritual journey, I found out that those are laws of the world and they're made up. They're made up. And it serves perfectly for what they were made to do. Entropy, etc., is serving perfectly the world. So the idea of life versus living dawned on me during one meditation many years ago. It's a huge awakening. And I've tried to teach it here a couple of times. I can't point to a place in Course where it is, but man, I'll tell you, it's completely changed my view of everything. And I want to share it wherever I get a chance. But you see, life is eternal. Living is not. The projection is limited, but the extension is permanent, right? The extension is of oneness, and that is life. When you see life everywhere, you are seeing the extension of life, and you can't extinguish it. But if you focus to the living, you will find death, and then you will find inconstancy, and you're in the hands of the ego. Yes, Barbara.
So I've got some real questions about that, and I don't know whether it's possible to deal with them with the time that we have left, but just about real world applications of that idea of constancy. I was talking last week in the Wednesday evening meeting about finding out that I had this huge car problem, right? That my brakes were out and it could cost up to $4,000. Well, and it's at the Ford place. And I was also saying about how peaceful I felt about that, that it was just, you know, I've had these layers of pretty big things going on, and I just have felt really peaceful about it until Ford didn't communicate with me. And I felt I could not get through to them. They were not telling me anything about my car. I would call and leave messages. They did not get back to me. I would get somebody on the thing, on the phone. They'd say, I'll get back to you. Then they wouldn't get back. So it just turned into something and I kept trying to say, don't let it shatter your peace.
Right.
You know, I'm going for that constancy thing.
Right.
I have a natural taste of it. You know, this bad news is not doing anything to me. But now I've got something that's jabbing at my ego.
Jabbing at your ego.
Mm-hmm. And I kept saying, just chill, don't work, until yesterday when I said, I'm getting and I could put in one of those words that pop up, Uber, and I'm going over there and I'm talking to those guys. I'm going to make them talk to me. And that's what I did. And it just took so much energy to keep my communication clear and, I wouldn't say kind, but clear about what I expected about communication with my car. And I mean, I was trying and I succeeded. But man, you know, the constancy.
This world, Barbara, for you and for the rest of your life is now the perfect classroom.
Yes. And it hurts.
You're going to have to take the brakes off of your car to shake you. And it but we want to get you to choose peace, even though you've got a circumstance like that.
Yeah. And the other thing I just want to say that also disturbs that peace, and this is kind of what Sundari was talking about having this 5-month experience. You can have this long, relatively for me, not 5 months, long experience of peace when these big things are coming in and you go, wow, this is not, you know, knocking me off center. But there's also and I've said this before here, it's the attack, the ego attack in the middle of the night where I wake up in fear. And, you know, that to me, it's the conditioned mind.
Yep.
Is very persistent. And I found the whole section in chapter 9 that's called the two evaluations.
Yeah.
And also grandeur versus grandiosity. Those describe the ego's mechanism. And so I recognize it. But to me, this is the work.
You bet that's the work. And your episodes at night are showing the muscles that you have developed over your entire life. And when you take your eyes off of them, they flex.
Yes.
But that will not last forever. You're doing the right things. Course in Miracles is a solution for having these terrors seemingly come from nowhere. They will get weaker and weaker as you do this work.
Yeah.
You have to
take this practice to where the rubber hits the road.
The rubber has to hit the road, though.
Yeah,
To just do it, and when everything is fine, it won't connect with your power.
Right.
It only connect with your ideas of what you can do. But you have to actually have a problem where you apply the light and see that it gets lighter.
Yeah.
All for a bigger picture. You know, it's all paying off.
Yeah.
You know, it's all so good. Good.
Yeah. I agree. You're,
good job. Wonderful. Wonderful. Yes, Sundari.
Yeah. And I think the waves get bigger as we get calmer.
As you get a bigger surfboard.
Hmm?
You get a bigger surfboard, you can handle bigger waves.
Well, the static gets quiet. And so the waves can come in closer and bigger. And I think the challenges might increase along the path.
You know what also happens? This is a nasty problem with this whole spiritual thing. Is the little waves cause more trouble than the big ones?
Yes.
Big waves are obvious. You can navigate those, but it's the little ones that take your peace. The Course actually covers this in a section. It's the Course in Miracles. Because your mind becomes, you start to see the world for what it is, and that anger and attack is a call for love. And so when these big anger and attack situations happen in your life, you kind of have an out, and it works. But then, you stub your toe. Or you drop a glass in the kitchen, and it shatters everywhere at 10:49 at night. You need to go to sleep. You can't leave a broken glass in the kitchen floor. You're going to be up late. Oh, just a glass, right? It's a dollar at the dollar store. But you let it take your peace. A little thing can take your peace. Whole Course in Miracles will you'll doing Course in Miracles will show you a whole new level of things that before you would have just shrugged it off and said, that's life. That's my life, and cleaned it up. But now you somehow get more upset than you would have before. Yeah. Beware of that also. Beware that as Sundari was saying, as you become more peaceful, the little things that you didn't worry about before suddenly become sticklers and shake you. They can shake you. It's the ego's trying to get you. Yeah, yeah. But that falls away too. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yes. Why don't we take a moment of loving silence now to close our meeting for a devoted servant of A Course in Miracles, taught many classes, taught online, held the hands of those who would take over the responsibility of the course and shepherd it into its large, large footprint that it has now, Dr. Bob Rosenthal. Another good Jew who served Jesus, I like to call him. Let's just take a moment and bless him as he's left his body and goes on with his wonderful light that he has gained and he has taught us. Thank you, Bob, for your service. Thank you for Course in Miracles. Thank you, Course in Miracles, for healing Bob's mind. And by the way, thanks to Ken Wapnick, too. Another devoted, go-all-the-way teacher. Thank you, thank you. Amen. Thank you, Sundari. Thanks for the reminder on that. Okay, everybody. We covered a lot of big topics tonight. Really important, wonderful gifts that this book is giving us and ways that it's doing it, ways that to help us do our work are introduced here. And we'll continue to follow up on those next week as we work through this wonderful section. Okay, thanks, everybody. Have a good night.
Thanks, everybody. Good night.
Good night.
Night, everybody.